Welcome to the eLaborate Topics podcast, where we focus on lab-specific strategies for medical laboratory professionals. We're proud to be the healthcare detectives that work behind the scenes to get the results needed to influence medical decisions. Let's grow together and jump right into the lab.
Hi, friends. Welcome to this episode of eLaborate Topics. We have an amazing roundtable for you. I am happy to be with my co-hosts, Lona Small and Stephanie Whitehead. And then we have an esteemed guest. So we have a frequent flyer of the eLaborate Topics podcast, Dr. Rodney Rohde. How are you?
I'm great. Hi, everyone. It's always an honor to join you, ladies. Thank you so much for having me.
Well, we're excited about this episode, listeners. And the reason we're excited is because we get to join forces with Dr. Rohde at the upcoming Lab Manager Summit. So if you have not gotten your ticket yet, it is not too late. You can get your ticket and you can meet us in Denver at the end of April. So we are looking forward to seeing you on the clinical lab day as well as on the regular day, so you could join and listen to Rodney's session. You will also get the opportunity to see Lona, Stephanie, and I on the stage together for the very first time, and you can stay and join my session where I get to be a featured keynote. So without further ado, I want to go ahead and jump into this episode because I know Dr. Rohde has some great information for us. But just before we do that, you know the routine. Share this episode out. Invite a friend. Sharing is caring. So make sure you do that. And let us know the feedback you receive, the tips you get from this episode. So listen closely, and we want to hear from you. We want to hear what you found most interesting from this episode. For those of you who don't know Dr. Rohde, he is, like I said, he is an esteemed guest here. He's published over 90 research articles and abstracts with over 100 international, national, and state conference presentations. As laboratorians, you know, we like to be behind the scenes, but Dr. Rohde has done an amazing job of getting in front of the scenes, in front of the camera, doing TEDx talks, podcasts, you name it, you've probably seen Dr. Rohde. So let's jump in and get started picking his brain and seeing the information that we can gather about the upcoming Lab Manager Summit and some of his other interesting work that he is doing in the big state of Texas and beyond. Are you all ready to jump into it and get started?
Absolutely. Definitely, definitely. So excited.
All right. Well, Stephanie, I'll kind of kick it over to you. Unless Dr. Rohde wants to go into a little bit more detail about himself, or you want to just jump right into it.
Let's jump right into it. We don't need to hear about me anymore.
All right. Well, if you have been.
Thank you for that lovely introduction, though.
You have been behind a rock with your back to the wall and your fingers in your ears. If you don't already know who Dr. Rohde is, he is a staple in our lab medicine community. And so we're excited to have him on our show. Dr. Rohde, you also led the clinical roundtable at the 2023 Lab Manager Leadership Summit, where I had the honor of participating with you, and I had an awesome time. This year, you'll be leading the clinical panel discussion with April Day, titled Maximizing Workflows, Quality, and Outcomes. So tell our listeners about this session this year and some of the key takeaways and actionable insights that you and April will be offering in this discussion.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you, Stephanie. And thank you all again for the opportunity to join you. I love your podcast, and each of you in your own right are doing amazing work around the world. So I thank you for this opportunity. So last year, as Stephanie mentioned, we had this. It was my first time. I don't know if it was your first time last year to go to the lab summit and really got a chance to meet the leadership within today's clinical lab and lab manager summit, and had really not participated in that before. So that was a wonderful experience to kind of learn kind of the round of information that they do. And it was a great time. I know you had a great time as well. So that was kind of fun. And then this time I get to come back and work with April. And as you mentioned, we're really going to that whole day, right? That whole day of April 29th, I believe is our day, looking at kind of the clinical piece of the medical laboratory. And we all know it's clinical, but really looking at kind of a clinical track because they have other days dedicated to some different types of topics. So our particular session will be somewhat of a panel, a little, I think it's just me and April this time. Last year we had, I think, two people on the stage with me. And so we'll be discussing, as you mentioned, kind of, you know, the current status of what's going on right now in the medical laboratory. You know, we're coming out of COVID. It's still out there. We obviously know that. We're still dealing with that. We're dealing with other things around the world and within the United States as far as ongoing workforce shortages, ongoing issues around how we handle some of the burnout, some of the issues with workforce lean measures, how lean can we go, right? And so when I think about that session, that's really what I'm going to be discussing with April is what she's hearing, what she's dealing with. And then my experience is, as you guys know, is primarily through my clinical affiliations with my medical lab science program. So I'm not working in the trenches of a hospital. I'm preparing students to go into those spaces for clinical rotations. I'm interacting with my alumni who are all over Texas and around the country working in those medical laboratories and other labs, public health labs and other spaces. And so I'm often interpreting or viewing that world through their lens, right? So, which is kind of different than being there. I certainly know being in that type of environment every day, conducting those tests and dealing with, you know, one of the common things I hear from my alumni is that I'll walk into work and we know it's, you know, at times lean, but literally someone had an emergency, someone called in, and there's really nobody but me, right? So that's a concern for me. And I think most people going forward is how do we maintain medical laboratory quality for our patients and for our colleagues because of this kind of, I mean, I don't know what word to use, kind of a pressure cooker, right? We are really lean. I know Stephanie is involved in this in the trenches, so maybe she can talk about this a little bit. But that, I think that's going to be the focus. And then what processes can we put into place? What resources can we reach out to, including individuals like yourselves? Like, what can we do to help our colleagues game plan for the best scenarios to kind of sometimes deal with those emergency shortages and what's happening?
Awesome. I love that. I love that you are able to stand back, observe some of the trends, and then come up with solutions. Even though you're not in the trenches, you get a very good viewpoint of all the things that's right. happening. It's like standing back and looking on and seeing some of the challenges. And I love that you're looking at lean and workflow because that's also very important. I did a lot of work in process improvement. I still do. That's kind of one of my big passion in the lab, other than what I do outside the lab. And I know that a lot of lab leaders, they'll come to me and they want to have those tools. A lot of people love practical things. So when they come to me, it's not so much the mindset, but I want to learn about lean. I want to learn about quality. I want to learn about these other things to lead. So just looking on, what do you see how the summit like this, the lab leadership, lab management summit, how do you see that helping leaders in the future? What are some of the things that they can gain to help us as we look towards the future?
Yeah, and please feel free to offer your own insights as we talk about this, because I know Stephanie especially is dealing with this, and I'm sure Taiwan is out there talking and dealing with people in this area. You know, for me, and I appreciate your statement, Lone, about kind of taking that step back, because I mean, it's been a while. I spent a decade working in those trenches, and it was different. that was back in the 90s and early 2000s. And now that perspective, which is helpful sometimes, is when I get to talk to the brand new entry level worker who's kind of, you know, drinking by fire hose, and they finally sometimes go, oh my goodness, everything my professors have been telling me about the environment is maybe even more strained than I thought, because we do that here at Texas State. We have wonderful faculty. Some of our brand new faculty literally have just come out of that pressure cooker. So you talk about a great resource. I've got Joanna Ellis, I've got Autumn Vella, I've got Adeyemi Oronriwaju, and we're kind of we're building a new faculty base. I've done a lot of hiring. So we too have undergone some turnover in the last 2 years. So they bring in fresh eyes, and I lean on those eyes, because entry level is kind of different than a manager. So one of my faculty members, Autumn, just came out of managing 3 different labs for her employer that she was formerly at. And she still at times kind of is able to impact students, especially our seniors that are graduating, with kind of real world wake up calls, right? We don't want to scare our students, but we certainly want them to enter the workforce understanding that they're going to be relied on right out of the gates. So that's one thing, Ron, that I would mention, that is, if you're coming out of a program or you're entering the workforce from whatever angle you're entering into the medical lab, understand that you need to speak up, you need to ask for help, you need to ask for resources for training and education around different things, because you may not have lots of people standing around you like you might have had 10, 15 years ago. So very lean processes in there. And then from the other standpoint, the kind of the middle of the road or the veteran or the manager side of the medical lab, and this is where, you know, some of you might have some insight here. I just think sometimes managers are getting so hammered with these shortages, because they're typically going to step in and fill that need, even if they have to get on the bench and step in, which is sometimes difficult because they're juggling quality control, they're juggling, you know, committee work, they're juggling something else they're doing with the C-suite in the hospital or what have you. So trying to provide some understanding and assistance for those managers or lead people within a particular area, like a hematology area or something, and what they can do. And so it looks like Stephanie might have some commentary there, because, you know, I haven't been a manager in that situation, but I've talked to so many of them, and I think they are looking for resources, and sometimes it's hard to give them concrete resources, you know, versus maybe support and understanding, but perhaps some of those resources are things some of you found out there.
No, I think you're so right, especially the part about the students. And I work at a facility that actually takes in some of the Texas State students. So we appreciate supporting that program. But you're right, right from the gate. And I think, you know, even when I came out of my clinical program so many years ago, X number of years ago, I feel like I had a little bit of time to kind of find my way, to kind of find my niche, to kind of silently maybe stand on the periphery and kind of learn a little bit, because there, you know, there were people in front of me who were kind of guiding me, engaging me. I would say for our listeners out there, especially our young student listeners, your career starts right out of the gate. And absolutely. I think, you know, lab manager summits like this one that we are all attending in Denver in late April are great tools, because that early in your career, you don't always have the ingenuity, the words, the confidence to speak up, to advocate for yourself, to pitch yourself, to say, you know what, I know I just graduated last year, but I'm ready for a lead role. I think I have what it takes, and to be able to present yourself instead of waiting by and bypassing or waiting on the sidelines, like Taiwana would say, for somebody to notice your skills. How can you pitch yourself and stand up? So I think you're right. You know, we are in such a place with our workforce challenges that we are asking our laboratory professionals to step up and fill some of these spots earlier. And the more you can do early in your career to prepare yourself, the better.
Go ahead, Taiwan.
Okay. No, I was just going to say, I think that's a good point. And collectively, we really are better. So these events such as the Lab Manager Summit and other summits that are out there are important, right? Because you might see one thing, I'm sure you all are you know, we all are experiencing the challenges with staffing shortages, but here in the Midwest, I'm in Ohio, we are seeing different challenges as well. So when we come together for events such as the summit, it allows us to have a think tank. And that's one of the things that I learned probably later in my career. So it's good that we're having this discussion, is I didn't put as much value on my network early. And so now my network is crucial. So I love being in the room with you all. I love being here with Dr. Rohde, getting that school perspective and being able to give him that perspective from a technical perspective of having multiple sites, and being on here with Stephanie, who has that executive leadership perspective of looking at the entire entity, and then going over to Johns Hopkins with Lona and her team on the East Coast of understanding academia and the challenges with being in that type of a center and quality and working with nursing. And so, of course, we can't all be in the same scope all the time, but having these think tanks allow us to get bits and pieces of information that's helpful on our journey. So I think for our students coming in, it's important for you to stay connected and stay engaged, not only in the institution or organization that you go to work for, but also with these professional societies and your online mentors that you may never even meet in person. But I think that's going to enhance your career for you. So that makes me think too about the role and responsibilities as we think about it from a lab manager standpoint. And I know, you know, the pandemic will forever be at the top of our mind and conversation, at least for the next several years. And I know I did a talk recently for leaders as to the different expectations for a lab manager. So when I got into the industry 20 years ago, you know, you were focused on technical, you were focused on the operation piece of it, right? Keeping the lab going, keeping the staff on the bench. But now as lab managers, we're challenged with being coaches, being counselors, being mentors, being advocates. Yep. We are challenged with so much more than just the technical piece. And I read a study somewhere that it says those that fail in their role, it is not due to technical ability. 89% of people that fail in their role is due to their leadership skills. It's due to their leadership experience, because we don't put the focus on that. We're not putting the focus on psychological safety. We're not putting the focus on soft skills. That focus from a historical mindset has give you more technical insight, give you more technical knowledge, but our teams are wanting and requiring more. So Dr. Rohde, I'm curious to, you know, hear your perspective about, you know, what are you seeing in regards to the roles and expectations of lab managers and any future trends that you are hearing from some of your groups that you're in?
Yeah, wonderful insight, Taiwana, because you're absolutely right. I think in the last 5 years, I mean, it's kind of been there, right, in the background over probably all of our lives with respect to working in the lab. But that piece around mental health and wellness, I think, is risen rapidly to the forefront. And not just the medical lab, but all healthcare and really across all sectors of the workforce. And so, you know, in an academic setting, what we've been trying to do really, you know, it wasn't happening right at first, but probably 2021 and beyond, we kind of started recognizing that. And it's what's bizarre is it's kind of changed every year, because remember, from an academic standpoint, when you get a new cohort, so I'm about to take 22 new students starting in the fall of 24, they will be completely different than 3 years ago, because they were all online in high school, for example. They had no experiences with interaction for their last year or two of high school. So I have to remind myself and my faculty that now, remember, when these guys come in, they may still be struggling with just interacting with each other and how you approach team projects and how you handle stress and how do you build resiliency within your own self and within your team. And so we've done some things in our academic setting with my faculty to try to think about that and be purposeful and understanding. I think what's hard, guys, for us is that, I'll just be frankly honest with you, what's really hard is you want to build resiliency and you want to build perseverance, because we all know how critical that is. But you also have to be understanding and empathetic, and that's traits that sometimes people have to work on, because I don't know about you guys, when I was growing up, you know, mom and dad, it was like, get a job, kid, you know, get out there and get going. I mean, I worked two jobs from high school on. I still work two jobs. And that's you got to be careful how you approach a 20-year-old with that kind of attitude. And I've had to learn. And part of being a parent, I've got two 20-year-old kids now that are out of school. And I'm sure some of you have that parallel. Sometimes I'll tell my students, you are my kids, but in a different way. You're like my work kids. Like, I have to figure out how to get you ready for work and life. And so I'm still learning how to do that. We're bringing in sometimes different individuals from, you know, the great thing is Lona can probably talk about too, is we have some great resources here at the university that are experts in that area with respect to talking to students about resiliency and how to build resiliency. Because if a faculty member just says, you know, for example, suck it up, just do the work, that doesn't work anymore. It might with one or two people, but with the bulk of them, they may crater, they may quit, they may walk out of my program or any program, they may quit the university. And so, you know, I think we're really in kind of this really difficult time, not only as educators, but perhaps supervisors and other people that are working with individuals, because we're kind of feeling our way through this. And those soft skills you talked about and those types of things that are so critical, trying to engage students, which we actually bring in career resources, for example, for one example, since you're asking about examples, bringing in career resources with people that can kind of help our students think about how to handle interviews, how to handle the workplace. And I know this all sounds real basic, but the longer I teach, I've been working and teaching for 30 plus years now, the things I think are common sense, and don't take that wrong, common sense or common knowledge, I guess would be the better word, I'm surprised sometimes, like, they actually don't know how to handle this situation, or someone, and this could be even a new employee, they don't know how to go through the proper routes before they impulsively act, whether it's on email or social media, or just act out. And again, this is just a general statement, right? I mean, we've all been in these situations. And so learning how to have difficult conversations with students and faculty and other people, I just can't say enough about this. I don't know what your thoughts are on it, but I find myself a student again. I mean, I need to learn how to be a better, as you said, coach and cheerleader and mentor. And I think we can't have enough of those. I look at all of you as mentors and friends. I mean, I need people to help me. help me, Stephanie, in my role as a professor, because it's challenging right now. It's challenging me more than ever in my career in the last few years.
You know, what's interesting is that in the we did an interview also with Scott Hanton, who is also doing a session at this summit. And he mentioned something very, very insightful that he said that as lab professionals working in a clinical environment, working in the hospital, a lot of times you don't have colleagues. You can't walk around and expect anyone to understand what you're going through. I mean, the closest is perhaps the radiology director or maybe the cath lab, you know, administrator, but nobody really understands what you're going through with the regulatory pressures, with the staffing shortages, with, you know, looking at validation plans and implementing instruments, and then with all of the other things that we've mentioned. And so being able to, you know, come to these sessions like this and these summits where you actually can be around people who understand what you've been going through every day is a relief. I love that you said that you are continuously learning, because soft skills almost is just a regular skill nowadays. You really can't even say it's soft skills.
It's necessary stuff.
Yeah. You know, when you were talking, it brought me back to a personal story of mine. Because to me, having the experience that you have, and you know, looking at your students for the cohorts that they are, like you said, this cohort coming in had that virtual high school experience, and how you all are trying to really accommodate them. You know, to me, it brought up like a DE&I component for students who, in addition to that, may have been disenfranchised or in rural areas or in school, public schools with little support, and maybe dealing with that on top of, you know, going to college and needing all of these resources. I'll tell you, I was one of those students. And funny story, I didn't know what office hours were until like my second semester. I literally thought office hours were the time for you to sit in your office and do your work. You know, nobody explained that. That was the time for me to come and seek resources. And so, you know, it truly is commendable that you're looking at how you can support your students. I think Lona has something to add too.
Yeah, I was really impressed with what you're doing with the students. And when, you know, a lot of times, we actually get those students that don't get the support starting in roles looking for leadership jobs. And I get a lot because I coach a lot of leaders that's either trying to level up. And you may think that maybe what I'm doing, you know, they probably should know. But we have leaders who need that you're giving to the students. So kudos to you that you're giving them, you know, interview skills and all that. People are paying for that. People are paying me to help them to move to the next level, to help them with interview skills, resume writing, just having that confidence within themselves that they have what it takes to grow. Another thing that I love that you're doing at Texas State is empowering not only yourself as leaders, but your team. Right now, there's a lot of work right now in institutions where team members don't know how to deal with challenges. They don't know how to deal with challenges for themselves. They don't know how to deal with challenges for their team. Like recently, we looked at some of our engagement survey and our patient safety survey. And what was coming out is there's a lot of wellness challenges. There's a lot of challenges where people feel as if the way they're spoken to when they make an error, there's a lot of stress coming through that. And we decide we're designing a program that's going to support people. So give leaders the tools. Like you say, I need help. A lot of leaders are saying, I need help. I want to help, but I don't have the tools. I don't have the verbiage. I don't have the emotional intelligence to deal with these challenges. So like you say, that should be a really big focus in a lot of these conferences, because people are saying, I need help as a leader. I want to help my team, but I don't have the tools. So I'm glad that you're looking, you're seeing that ahead of time, and you're starting at that level before they even get in the workplace. Another thing that I pick up is like people, it's not like students don't want to do the work. Now they're open and they're willing to say what they need. And so many of them, once you understand the different generation, they want to do the work, but they want to have some connection with the work that they do. They want to have connection to their why. They want to see that they're there and whatever they're doing is contributing to a bigger picture. So if that's not happening, they're gone.
Right.
Now they're more, what should I say, enlightened. And they're like, what I'm doing, I want to make sure it's making an impact. At an early age, we waited until it was leadership. Then we're like, we're ready to make an impact. They are ready now. And the good thing is that a lot of people are retired. We have a lot of new people in, so they can start moving and taking on roles earlier. And once they're guided, they'll make a difference. So if we can support them, instead of saying they're different, then that would be really great. And I love what you're doing.
You are so right on, both of you. I mean, we recently, Professor Joanna Ellis, who's about to leave us, which is really sad, but she's been fantastic for us. But one of the things she helped with our program is to build in what she called, you know, it's cultural humility. And so it's kind of the same idea around diversity and things, but really hard work. Really tough work, and most of her PhD that she's working on is kind of in this area. So the idea that we, and this is tough, guys, we're trying to introduce to our seniors, like, so we have a class right before they go to clinicals called Bridge to Clinical Practice. And the idea is that not only are we showing them competency, so actual laboratory skills, you have to be able to do this CBC and you have to be able to do this clinical gram stain, but we're also talking to them about situational issues. You got to work with so many generations. You got to work with so many different types of people in the workforce that you may think, because you're not actually in a patient's room every day, that doesn't matter, but it matters because everybody in the laboratory is so diverse and up and down, not just age, but across ethnicity and other types of demographics. So those are interesting and tough conversations, but what we found is they appreciate it a year later. Right at the moment, it's really hard sometimes for different people to kind of engage in that conversation. And you know, the other hard part, just to mention to you all, is our ultimate goal, obviously, in a medical lab science or any kind of similar program, is you have to get the content across to Lona's and Stephanie's comment. You still have to get that technical skill set and that educational skill set, but now we're being kind of asked to bring in the soft skill understanding and the emotional intelligence. I mean, all of those are key words that we use. That's hard to do, right? I mean, in many ways, my PhD in public health, I had massive coursework in that area, but these guys, they're getting pieces in different courses because we really don't have the hours. So it's kind of a limitation at the undergrad level, is we can't spend too much time because they have to know hematology. So I don't know if that makes sense, but that is kind of a hurdle, I think. And if other academic program directors out there, you know, at the summit or at an ASCP conference or an ASCLS conference or wherever we all get together, probably something to think about, because we're also asking chairs and faculty to do this, and we're not experts. And so that's why I told you, I have to reach out to career services. I have to reach out to sometimes the College of Education, like to counseling, or even the Student Health Center, like a psychologist or something, and let them come in and kind of help us think about that in our curriculum lanes. And it's probably not perfect. So I appreciate all the wonderful accolades you're talking about, but it's in progress, right? But we feel like we need to bring it up. If nothing else, to Lona's point, they're enlightened. These guys, they want to change the world, which is wonderful. But as you guys know, you have to be careful how you walk into a brand new employer and approach that. You can get yourself into trouble if you're over the top, right? If you're like, you have to know the process. There's still a process. You have to kind of be careful with that. It's part of mentoring, right? You don't want to shut that down, but you also want to go, okay, here's how you need to approach this, right? You need to, maybe you need to sit down, have a meeting with your leadership team, talk about your ideas, put it in writing, maybe a proposal. You know, are you willing to lead that? You know, these are the ways you move up the supervision and other ladders. So just, they don't know that, right? You think that they would know that, but sometimes they don't.
Well, that's great, because that's the reason why it's good for any lab managers or administrators out there listening to make sure that as you're working with programs on your clinical rotations, even if it's a phlebotomy rotation, that you are working hand in hand with those program coordinators. Because if they are doing things like programs like Dr. Rodi has mentioned in their program to inspire their students to have them come out of their program, you know, really wanting to tackle the world. And then they get into your lab and you just put a steel lid on that boiling pot of water and put out that flame with get on the bench, take a break at 12. You need to be back by 12:30. Don't clock out past 4 because we don't want overtime type of attitude. You will lose them. And so that's the tug and pull with the recruitment and retention tug of war that happens. And Dr. Rodi, I'm going to steer it back to your session, because I mean, just listening to you, you have so much to offer in this roundtable. I can't wait to attend. And I don't want you to give away too much of a spoiler alert. So people still have to come to the session. But can you give us a little teaser of some, maybe some personal story or experiences that you'll be sharing that'll be valuable to the people who attend?
Yeah, I don't know if it's giving up the presentation too much, because you probably kind of have already heard some of what we're going to be talking about. And again, I can't speak for April yet. We're still kind of chatting a little bit about this, because it's what we got about 6 or 7 weeks, I guess, now before we get there. But it's almost we're developing it as we go. And so we're trying to make sure we address tangible things, to Lona's point. What resources can we offer managers about workflow? You know, there's a lot, and I'm not an expert in this, but there's a lot of interest in AI, and that might bleed over into our session a little bit. I'm trying to fill that out because I'm not an expert in that area. I'm kind of dabbling in that a little bit personally with certain things, also dabbling in it from an academic standpoint about, you know, the whole issue of honesty and things like that around academic work. So, but there's a place, there is an absolute place. And I think most of us have to understand that it's coming, and how do we approach that? That's going to help our future employees and students know how to use it properly. Right. So that could be a piece. Again, April may be doing a little bit more in that area. And then just how can we help with these issues of shortages and lean times? And we don't have all the answers. So it may turn out to be, for lack of a better word, a Q&A with the audience. I'm hoping a lot of you are coming, and I hope you sign up to come. And because I do think these types of summits, as Taiwana mentioned, these are part of the resources, is when we put these things together and we get to sit down with each other, we can try out each other's ideas. So that's part. And I think the other piece is going to kind of really lean into best practices. I'm going to talk about some of the things already discussed with bringing in outside sources to kind of think about new employee onboarding. I'd love to hear your thoughts, Stephanie, on this too. I mean, Stephanie and I are literally 40 miles apart here in Texas, and she's so graciously helped our program with students. I can't tell you, I'm going to say it publicly, how helpful it's been, because we haven't even discussed clinical rotations and that issue, but academic programs are really struggling to place students for those learning opportunities. And Stephanie and her team has just been wonderful over the last year or so. So I can't wait for that to continue. But that piece too, kind of that piece around how are we going to work with clinical sites who need to do work, right? You have to get results out because you're working for a hospital, but then how do we also provide an opportunity to grow academic programs and to onboard things? And I know one of the things we'll be talking about later is you know, what's the professional world doing about workforce shortages, and how are we handling that? And so some of that may pop up in there too about the work I've been doing with ASCP and others around program name changes and visibility and awareness and getting more people on board. Again, I'm really excited. I mentioned we were taking 22 students this year. That's an increase. We actually had almost 35 to 40 applicants, and they were so good that we upped our number to 22. We typically take 20, and we have 6 or 8 really good alternates. And so this is a good problem, but the conversation then becomes for lab managers and others, because we're all in the same pot together. How do we find a place for all of this? How do we support the pipeline? As you guys know, it's got to be sustainable and ongoing. We can't have band-aids for quick fixes. We need to find a way. Maybe we need more academic programs. Maybe we need more hospital-based programs. Maybe we need more industry academic partnerships, which you guys are seeing with ARUP and St. Louis University with Quest. And I mean, we just need ideas. We need think tanks, to Taiwana's point. We need to keep doing this, and it's not going to happen overnight, but we're making some strides, right? We got to celebrate these successes when we have them and really get that workforce to understand that it's a circle, right? We have to have the Stephanie and Lonas and other people of the world that are taking students, even when it's hard because they're short, but we have to find a way, even if it's one, we have to find a way to kind of build that. So that's some of what we're going to talk about, and probably more, you know, because I like to kind of leave it open and, you know, I might even ask for some suggestions from the leadership team that's putting the summit together if they have specific topics they would like us to address.
I love the good problem of having a lot of students and now trying to find places to put them, you know,
it is.
That pipeline going. And you are right, even if it's hard, during the pandemic, when we were so short and we needed to have rotations, we didn't have enough people to do the rotations. And we started coming together and brainstorming and can we try on other shifts? And we're talking about limited staffing. What we decided, we said, look, we're going to bite the bullet. We don't have enough people, but we're going to bite the bullet to accept the students, because we're going to have to suffer first before we can expand. That's the only way we can get these students in. Even though we are short, we can't keep saying we are short. So we decided we're going to bite the bullet. We're going to take the students. We're going to rotate on different shifts. And so I love that, Anna. So anybody else that's listening, think about that, because we're moving into expansion, and I hope we can all think that way. I can already see that at Johns Hopkins in terms of people who are ready to come back to work. Hopefully people are getting more excited about the profession. We just want to keep that mindset. So I love that. One thing that you said, Dr. Rohde, is you're doing this round table and you're talking about some of the things that it's something you're curious about, you're excited about, you want to have other people's involvement, input, but you're willing to take this on. And I get the feeling that you are not afraid to take on new things, new challenges, learn new things. That's a great role model. So give us some examples of areas in which you were willing to just walk into something that's new, uncomfortable, and how did it work out for you? And after that, you probably could give us some steps at how we can do that, how the audience can do that, just moving into uncomfortable environment that's new for you. Tell us a little bit about that.
Yeah, thank you, Lana. That's a great question. And I get that sometimes because of my experiences. I guess I'm old. I've been doing this 32 years now. I don't feel old, but you know, 3 decades, it's kind of, in hindsight, sometimes it takes a moment to reflect. And I can think of examples all the way back to when I walked out of my master's degree and went to work for the public health department. Back then, so I'll give you a couple of examples. One's quite a while ago, but it built my career. So let me start with that. I came out of, you know, as you guys know, I kind of backdoored this profession. I did a bachelor's in microbiology and a master's in virology. And I didn't even know what this was. I just thought I could go to work, you know, right away in a hospital. And when I started looking, I needed the credential and I didn't have it, in all honesty. So I went to the public health department and thankfully I found a career start there. Wonderful. I actually wouldn't change it. It was a wonderful way to enter my life career path. But while there, Texas was experiencing this huge rabies outbreak in animals. And so I was working in rabies and arbovirology. And I mean, I'd only been there a year and a half, pretty new employee, kind of feeling my way around. And my supervisor, who knew I had done some virology work in my master's and had done this new thing called PCR, this was in 92, 93, right when it was really starting to be utilized. They're like, hey, we need a way to, we're going to go into the field and try to actually vaccinate wildlife using oral vaccines. So this was state of the art, unheard of type of technology back then. This was 94. And they said, but we need someone from the lab that will work with CDC and others from Canada and some others that can look at rabies samples from the wildlife and tell us which rabies variant it is. And back then, you know, so variant, right? We were talking about this in the 90s, and now all you hear about is COVID variants, but we had variants then. We really weren't sequencing and doing all of that yet, but we were starting to do PCR. And back then we were doing things, and you guys remember this, DNA fingerprints. And so we would amplify a piece of DNA and cut it up into pieces using restriction enzymes. And if you were lucky and the variants were different enough, the different virus variants, you could literally see a fingerprint. And so I kind of knew how to do that. But what they did was, to make a long story short, they said, hey, we're creating a brand new innovative position. Would you be interested in being 50% laboratorian and 50% molecular epidemiologist that's more in the field? You know, I was 24, 25. I was just getting started. Didn't know half of these people that were talking to me, but I took a step forward and kind of terrified, right? They sent me to CDC for training. But I met some of the world's greatest rabies researchers, Dr. Charles Rupert and Gene Smith, just giants in the field. They're my friends now. And so I tell this story because that decision to take a step into the unknown changed my life. I can't even begin to tell you how much it changed my life because it set the path for international work. It set the path for understanding how public health and healthcare were really one and the same. And that's that one health that you hear all the time. That was my mindset 30 years ago. And so it has made all the difference in my career. And I think it bleeds out when I teach. A lot of my students go into public health. We need public health laboratorians too, as well as medical lab people. So I often tell my students, to Lona's point, that don't be afraid of something new or difficult or unknown, just kind of learn and find a mentor perhaps and take that baby step, even when it's scary, because in hindsight, I would never be here today. I wouldn't have gotten my PhD. I wouldn't have done any of this. I'd have been sitting on some bench probably, which is fine, but that's what I would have been doing. I would have been a kind of a typical laboratorian, which I total respect for all that. But to all of y'all's point, when we started, what I absolutely am passionate about now is science communication and health literacy and spreading the word and the gospel about what we do. And none of that would have happened without that first step. So that's one thing. And if I could share one quicker, more recent issue, it would be just recently, just taking on this journey to change our program name, which I know we're going to talk about some more later. But you know, I was asked by ASCP to join this Blueprint for Action Workforce Committee. You know, we all are busy. I really don't have the time sometimes to do this stuff, but to all of y'all, I know I'm speaking to the choir. If I don't do that, or if you don't do that, you never meet people and you never see solutions. You're locked into your little world and you try to keep doing the same thing, right? What's insanity? Beating your head against the same wall, doing it over and over again. So if you don't get out and see this, even if it means a little extra work, you don't know. And so when I joined that, Susan Harrington and Edna Garcia and others asked me, well, Dr. Rohde, you're here. Would you like to change your program name to? I'm just like, oh my God. You know, I mean, it's been a 2-year journey. And so it's not always hard, you know, it's not always work, 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 but it comes in cycles. And so to your point, you know, even soft skill talking earlier, sometimes you have to tell young people or new people that are coming into the field, yeah, there's going to be some work. Don't let that scare you. There's also going to be some downtime, right? It's a cycle. And so you have to take things like change in as it comes. You have to know how to say no, and I'm not great at that because I love interacting with people, but you do have to learn how to gauge your busyness and what you can do. I've also learned to be very transparent to Lona's point. So sometimes I'll tell someone, you know what, God, that sounds like an amazing opportunity, but could you circle back around in 6 months or 9 months or next year? Because I've just got too much on my plate. And ultimately what you don't want to do, no matter who you are, is overextend yourself to where you become mediocre at everything. You want to be really good at some things and not mediocre at everything. So those are just a couple of examples, but man, that's a great question. I've got many, and I think it's age too and experience. Looking backwards, I'm sure you guys have your own stories, but I can pinpoint now like different points in my career where that was the first step. And then that coming to academia is another one, big step. My PhD, huge step. And it just keeps building as I go through my life. So I'm enjoying the ride now. It's just fun. Now I'm just trying to manage my projects and my work effort.
Awesome. So you said learn, find a mentor or others that you can collaborate with, mm-hmm. and then take small steps. Okay.
Awesome. Take it in stride. Take it in stride and ask for help. Ask for help.
Get support.
Yes.
Yes. Awesome.
I love that. I love the story that you shared with us, Dr. Rohde. And one of the things that it makes me think about, especially us as leaders, is that we're constantly needing to model the behavior or model the leadership that we want to see. And it's okay not to have all of the answers. We're never going to have all of the answers. So those listeners out there, I am going to free you right now. You do not have to have all of the answers. The most important thing is that you're constantly learning and growing, and then you start to have resources that have the answers that you don't have. So I know we are talking about the Lab Manager Summit and getting ready to wrap up this episode, but want to make sure that the listeners know the Lab Manager Summit is April 29th and May 1st in Denver, Colorado. Rodney session is on the 29th, the clinical panel discussion, and that's 2 to 3 p.m. Mountain Standard Time. And then you get to see us, the lovely ladies of Elaborate Topics, right after at 3:15 to 4:45 Mountain Standard Time. But my last question for you, Dr. Rohde, is because we're talking about this conference and we're talking about people need to be in the building, but being in the building comes at a cost. It comes at a fee. And so you are out and you're working with different stakeholders. You're giving us the academic insight. So how do you, or what would you say to somebody who want to be in the building, right, but they don't really know how to advocate for why it's important to be in the building? They don't know how to advocate to their manager, or to, it could be potential corporate sponsors listening to this episode that want to spend some money. We never know.
Right.
What insight would you give to somebody that wants to be in the building but don't know how to communicate the value of being in the building? How do they say, I need to be at the Lab Manager Summit because this is going to impact my career journey. What tips would you give them of being able to advocate?
What a great question. Talk about practical advice. I love that question.
Well, you know me, I'm all about the practical.
Yes. And this is, I really like it because these are things I was mentioning earlier. And to Stephanie's point about office hours and not knowing what it is, I still do a full hour about my syllabus because I found people just, I need to go over it, expectations, all of that. Like people don't understand there's a reason you follow the schedule, right? So what a great practical question. So let me think about that a little bit. One thing I think you can do, because I talked to my faculty about this too, and new graduates, I can't get there. Can't get there, Dr. Rohde. I don't have any money, I don't have any time. And so some of the things I talk about, and it may not happen right away, right? So one of the things I talk about is one, you know, if you're in a hospital or a public health lab or something like that, are you a member? Are you a member of some of these different professional organizations? Are you part of coming together and finding ways to work with people? So I'm going to kind of give two answers here. Perhaps you can get involved with different areas, and it takes time, right? This does not happen overnight. None of this happened for me overnight. It's a career sometimes, but you have to get started at some point. So ask, get to know different people. It might be your colleagues that are members with ASCP or ASCLS or the Lab Manager Summit Group or anyone, and find out if you can get involved in a project. Perhaps the Lab Manager Summit will say, how would you like to come and be part of the panel? We will help you with travel. We will help you with a hotel night. You know, and if you can start, so that's one side. Perhaps you can find a way that helps your employer to understand that you are going hard at helping with the expense of going and the time. And if they're willing to give you time off, maybe you can help with some of the other stuff. So that's one answer. And again, that takes time. That took me years to kind of build that. I'm sure you guys would agree. It kind of takes some time to build that national or state reputation. And it comes through speaking, writing, being on committees, being willing to be in a leadership role. You don't always get to sit in the back and not lead something. If you lead something, people really get to know your work ethic and what you can do. So that's one part. The other part I would say is that, again, I think it's a conversation you have with your leadership team, and you put something out there that's tangible for them. For example, I'll give you one example. If I was a hospital manager, a laboratory manager, and my people were wanting to do something, or even I wanted to do something, I would propose something like, you know, I don't know how we can engage with academic programs. We've lost connection with Texas State University, and I see that they're involved with TACLES, or they're involved with the new ASCP Riverwalk chapter. I really need to get there. I need to be there for a day or two, and I need to make some connections. I need to meet people like Stephanie Whitehead and find out what is she doing right for academic programs. And then that conversation starts. And so you're coming back to your manager or your lead or whoever you have to get permission to go do these things, that you are not just going to take 2 days off. You are going there with a mission, and your mission is to figure this piece out. How can I build a relationship with an academic program that could help with our workforce? We might start taking students again. What are the nuts and bolts that I need to do? And I need to go meet someone to do that. And if you put it out there like that, I mean, you might get a no, but I mean, it'd be hard to say no if I was a manager and somebody is talking to me about solutions to get people to apply to positions and stuff. So maybe I take a chance and say, you know what? You're going, but I expect, so you got to do the work. Like if you go, make sure you do that work so that you meet with Stephanie, you meet with her colleagues, you start asking questions, and you think about a plan to come back and set up a clinical affiliation agreement with the university, and you're off and running the next year. And then it builds like, okay, look what I did. I want to go to the national meeting now. I want to join the DEI committee. I want to join this group. I want to do that. And maybe you lead some of that. Again, it's just one of those statements, right? So take it for what it's worth. you don't really move up or get ahead in the world by sitting in the back of the room. You don't have to do everything. And I know people sometimes don't want to be the lead. Maybe you can co-lead. Maybe like you guys, you three are doing this together. There's comfort in colleagues. There's comfort in friendship. Find a way to do something where you're not just not being part of the solution, right? We need more people to get in the fray and help us figure this stuff out. So those are my practical pieces of advice. And then again, once you start talking and speaking and maybe getting more involved, it's not everybody that's going to get overly active like us, but then the opportunities really start coming in.
I love that advice, because what you don't want to do is just go to your lab administrator or lab manager and say, hey, there's this thing that's 2 days in Hawaii or Las Vegas. I'm going to need 2 days off.
Red flags go straight up, right?
Yeah, they're waving all in front of my face. But show them the value. Again, it's very hard to say no to a person that I can see on LinkedIn, social media, and different professional organizations is very involved. But then also bring something back. Do a lunch and learn. Do an in-service with our team on what you learned, or you know what we can do in our laboratory to implement the things that were mentioned at that meeting. And so that takes research on your part. And so I'm going to ask you one last question for our listeners. Sure. Once they get the approval to go, now they are packing their bags. They're on their way. As a person who attends a lot of summits, professional meetings, board meetings, conferences, and things like that, what are your pro tips for preparing for a conference so you can maximize your time there and make sure you're getting every penny, every dollar, like Tawana said, out of your experience and bringing things back worthwhile to your team?
Well, that's another great question. We need to put something together, guys. This sounds like a document, right? Or some kind of a thing we could put together. I think the first tip I would give would be what I think hopefully most people would think about is you do need to take a little time to pre-plan. It's like a pre-lab. Like, what am I going to be doing today? Don't show up in lab with no clue, right? It's going to be difficult to learn anything if you're trying to figure out what you're actually doing that day. So take a little time, you know, maybe a day or two before the meeting or a week before, you know, whatever works for you. Look at the sessions, right? You want to see what sessions are out there. You can't do them all typically. So sessions are important. What do you need to, is there anything you need to do to prepare? Is there an opportunity to participate in a workshop? So if you've never been to a big meeting or even a state meeting or a smaller meeting, sometimes there's extra opportunities the morning before a conference starts where there's actually a workshop, how to learn how to do next generation sequencing. I mean, there's all kinds of stuff that pops into these conferences. So if you're that person, and again, to your manager's point, you could say, not only am I going to some of these talks, I'm going to go learn how to be a better laboratorian. Like I'm going to learn some skills the day before at this workshop. So that's part of it. And then don't take for granted how important it is to network. You know, are there opportunities to go to a reception? Are there opportunities to go to lunch and learns? We all know about those. Some of the best conferences that I've been to have been lunch roundtables, where I sit down with someone like Lona and six other people, and I learn all about coaching and mentoring or Taiwana's, you know, expertise. And sometimes it's so much more effective than in an auditorium of, you know, 200 people. So look for those opportunities. It's almost a conference within a conference. What are the opportunities when you're there to maybe sit down and get to know somebody? And that's probably the biggest piece of advice I could give is every conference, every summit, every class you take, make a friend. Find someone that could be a future mentor and colleague and someone that can listen to you and you can bounce ideas off. Even one person is, to me, worth a trip. And it can happen online too, right? I've got people all over the states and countries that I've yet to meet, and they're wonderful friends and colleagues. So it's a little harder, but you can make connections online and certain things. And then ultimately, are there industry / corporate types of opportunities to mix with, you know, salespeople or industry people that are showing equipment off or platforms or assays, maybe that's part of the reason you're going. And you need to bring back some literature and bring back some opportunities to cost compare across different platforms for your manager. Maybe you can actually do that work. You know, part of what I'm going to do while I'm there is I'm going to go visit 5 different companies about a small tabletop hematology analyzer for my program, whether it's academic or you're working, and you can bring back that type of information. So I just think that's all real helpful. And maybe you guys have other tips. I mean, there's even post-conference stuff to think about, you know, do the surveys. Don't be afraid to help. They're trying to seek your feedback. And you don't have to be over the top extroverted, but don't be afraid to go to the dinner reception or maybe sit with some different people. And you don't have to go crazy, like, but you'd be surprised how many people will engage with you when they find out you're from X state or X lab. And we're all often dealing with the same issues. And so all you have to do is say one thing like, oh my God, how are you guys dealing with X? And the floodgates open, right? We're all dealing with the same stuff. So the conversation is pretty natural in my experience.
Awesome, awesome, awesome. So there you have it, listeners, all the good reasons why you should be signing up for the Lab Manager Leadership Summit. So this is, again, I know Taiwana, well, let's reiterate, it's going to be April 29 to May 1st in Denver, Colorado. So just look that up. Just look up summit.labmanager.com/leadership. And we'll put that in the show notes. And there are more than enough reasons why we'd want to see you there. So this was really a great episode. Thank you so much, Dr. Rohde. This was awesome. This is just a teaser. And so we have had Dr. Rohde on discussing different topics, and we're really excited about this one. So listen to this episode on directimpactbroadcasting.com or any of your podcast platform. And we always air on a Tuesday. So you can always reach out to us at elaboratetopics@directimpactbroadcasting.com for any questions, if you want to be a guest on the show. And until we talk to you again, have a great one.
Thank you for tuning in to another episode of Elaborate Topics, where your hosts discussed relevant strategies for laboratory professionals. Please subscribe to this podcast on your favorite podcast platform and listen to us on directimpactbroadcasting.com. Stay tuned for another episode with information you can use to excel in your laboratory career.